Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing contactless payments, employer-assisted savings, and BOGO flights.
BOGO flights makes me wonder if it's in like Florida where you have to buy two flights in order to get that one free. You know, they're not going to give you that one flight half off. You have to buy one full price flight and then you get that second one for
You're
free.
Talking about Publix BOGO deals.
Publix BOGO specifically.
There's a specific law in the state of Florida where you can't actually buy just one. You have to buy two items in order to get one free. Whereas in Georgia, when we shop at Publix, you actually can just buy one and get it half off.
Exactly. One of those little grocery trivia facts.
Yeah.
If you happen to vacation in Florida like we do from time to time for our beach trips.
Oh, no. You need to get two bottles of ketchup.
It's like, dang it. What am I going to do with two bottles of ketchup?
All I need is one.
Kate's like, why are we going home from the beach with more groceries than we came here with? You know?
That's how it goes down in Florida. But we'll talk more about the BOGO flights here in just a second.
Yeah. And we normally talk about something here at the beginning, something a little more personal that we're actually going to save for the end of the episode on this episode.
An update on my Nissan Leaf.
Yeah, exactly. So last week, you had a window busted out and you shared how you went about getting that replaced, how you got that fixed.
By the way, I will say a lot of good insight from some of our listeners in the Facebook group this week after I shared that. And certain insurers, and this is something that we should have talked about last week.
Oh, the glass break thing.
Yeah, they do have specific protection just for glass that's either a smaller amount per month or sometimes it's free and doesn't involve your deductible. But then again, even taking advantage of that coverage can put something on your CLU report and it could result in higher premiums if you changed insurers at a future date. It's also convoluted, but it is worth mentioning that sometimes insurers are really great about covering glass breakage, and it doesn't involve paying a deductible.
Yeah, I know that's how they actually have it in South Carolina, the entire state, regardless of what insurer you have. If you have a chipped or cracked windshield, you get it replaced for free. South Carolina is actually only one of three states that offer that, so it's pretty cool. Although there's never a free lunch, right? Like, at some point you're paying for it, whether it's, I don't know, through taxes, higher insurance rates, somehow I'm sure those folks are paying for that.
Yeah. But it is nice to know, especially if you live in one of those three states, I think it's South Carolina, Florida, and Kentucky, that's the case. So yeah, good to know that before you replace that glass on your own dime. But Matt, let's get to our Friday flight, a sampling of stories we found interesting this week. And let's first give a quick update to a story we talked about recently. Not too long ago on the show, we talked about some of the dangers of high interest savings accounts. That sounds a little weird because what's dangerous about a savings account? Well, there are, of course, a lot of websites touting savings products that are actually just so much riskier than a traditional savings account. Many of these online savings accounts aren't actually FDIC insured, which puts your money at risk. And then CNBC actually reported just recently that one of the fake banks online is going through a tough time and they're not actually returning customer deposits in a timely manner. This particular online bank, and I'll put that in quotation marks, bank, is called Beam. They were promising returns of up to 7% on your money. So it's just interesting that happened recently after we talked about it. And it goes to show that it is highly risky to put your money with one of these online accounts that isn't backed by federal protection.
Yeah, so what are you going to do about that hashtag Team Beam tattoo that you got a few months ago? What's interesting about Beam, too, is that they're not technically a bank, you know, like you say, quote unquote, bank, but they're not really a bank. But on their site, you know, they did used to say that they partnered with many well-known banks like Citigroup and Morgan Stanley. And those banks are actually FDIC insured, right? And so, you know, whether Beam was just lying or maybe those relationships just went sour. Yeah, individuals who deposited money with Beam are just in a crappy position right now. So yeah, just a good reminder for folks, if it's too good to be true, if it sounds like it's too good to be true, it probably is.
It's like, oh, my bank and every other bank I know is paying 0.5%. This bank's paying 7%. It sounds legit.
I mean, that's the thing, that like there aren't a whole lot of great options out there. But you know, if you are looking for an FDIC insured account that pays better than the average rates, we'll make sure to toss a helpful link into the show notes. And while we do encourage, you know, the use of higher interest savings accounts online, yeah, I would stay away from the ones that do seem, too good to be true.
Yeah, and in particular, look them up on the FDIC's website to see if that bank is actually in the FDIC insurance program. That's a good rule of thumb if it's a bank that you're not sure about. Matt, speaking of higher returns, but higher returns that are actually real, let's talk about the stock market really quick, because stocks have had a really great couple of weeks. And you know, we don't typically talk about the stock market and what's been happening over the last week or two very often, and that's for a good reason, right?
It's not really our beat.
Yeah. There's just not really much of a point as incredibly long-term investors to talk about what happened last week or last month in the stock market. Investors like you and I and most of our listeners who are planning to let our investments sit for decades to come, it's just not that big of a deal what happened last week. But the recent stock market highs post-election are kind of interesting and I think worth talking about. What was interesting to me, Matt, is that even at the end of last week, after the election had taken place and who the next president was going to be was still completely up in the air, we weren't sure, the stock market was exploding upwards. There was still a lot of confusion in the political arena, but stocks were climbing higher. And the interesting thing was it looked like investors were actually looking more towards the House and Senate races, and it looked like there was going to be political deadlock in the nation's future. Basically, the division of Democrats and Republicans at the federal level means there won't be much legislation, or at least meaningful legislation, getting passed in the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, businesses, the fewer rules and regulations, typically, the better.
Yeah. You know,
for a lot of businesses. And so a lot of folks see that and they think, oh, cool, businesses are going to be able to expand, explode. There's going to be a lot of growth in the coming years because there is going to be less regulation. That's the idea.
Yeah, and if nothing else, more certainty, more predictability, and that's important too. Right. And maybe we're reading into the tea leaves a little bit too much, but either way, these short term market movements don't mean that much to those of us who are investing for decades to come. It's just kind of an interesting blip on the radar to see that stocks have done really well and that actually that level of uncertainty led to some certainty for investors.
Yeah, and we saw earlier this week as well that news on the vaccine front also lifted markets, right? Pfizer, they reported that their new vaccine trials point to 90% effectiveness. And this is great news for our country and for the whole world, right? From a health standpoint, to potentially, you know, hopefully put this nightmare behind us. And from a stock market perspective, like overall stocks did go up, but it does depend on what specific stocks that we're talking about. Because good news on the vaccine front means possibly returning to normal life. So companies like Boeing and Chevron saw huge increases on Monday, like I think double-digit increases on that one day, as folks bought those stocks. Whereas tech companies like Netflix and Amazon, you know, these different technology companies that have seen their stocks go up during the pandemic, they actually saw pretty big decreases as investors started to bail. This is a process called stock rotation, as folks sell certain stocks and then get into other ones in different sectors. And again, these changes don't have an impact on the way that we invest. However, it is helpful, I think, to have an explanation of what's going on in the market. You know, if you happen to see some headlines or you happen to check a stock chart, people will react to the market, and that's why we see volatility in the short term. But that's something that we don't concern ourselves with as much, but it is interesting to know that.
Yeah, always fascinating to kind of see why the market does what it does, even though we're not making changes to,
right.
to our portfolio because of it.
Yeah, it's helpful to have just a solid understanding behind what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Matt. Yeah, and with Pfizer reporting on that new vaccine and the high effectiveness rate, that's great news. And it's great news for the potential of flying in the near future. How near in the future is hard to predict.
It might be a while.
It might still be a while. But we noticed recently there were a couple stories written about buy one, get one free flights. And now that's kind of a new strategy right now to get Americans to start traveling again because demand for airfare is still ridiculously low.
You want to fly to California? How about a flight for your spouse as well?
Yeah. And Alaska Air in particular, they were offering like all three seats at the same time. So they're like, just buy one, you get three.
Bring your kid along too. Why not?
So yeah, basically getting you a whole row so you don't have to sit near anybody else.
I mean, it makes sense too, because if you're going to buy a flight for like you and maybe a couple family members or like you and two friends, certainly you're probably potting together. So there's, yeah, a little bit less of a health concern with those immediately sitting next to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And AirAsia was offering an unlimited travel vouchers for a few months for customers that couldn't stay out of the airplane, I guess.
Like a flight buffet. Right. It's like, all you can fly.
Exactly.
Come on down.
And obviously,
it's like they're like the Olive Garden of flights.
The Olive Garden or the Piccadilly. I don't know. The Golden Corral.
Your family with AirAsia.
So many buffets to choose from. obviously, though, the airlines are still having a really difficult time. Hard to get people to fly, and that makes sense. I mean, Matt, I'm still not jazzed to get on a plane. I don't really have any plans to travel anytime in the near future, at least until things like meaningfully change. But, you know, there are some people who are itching to get back in an airplane, and these ridiculously low prices could be just the thing to convince you. So we would say keep an eye out for frequent airfare promotions that are happening, like these ones that we've seen. You might be able to fly for way less than you thought. And if you want to keep up on cheap airfare deals, we've had Scott from Scott's Cheap Flights on the show before. His email newsletter is, I think, the best thing out there to stay on top of what cheap flights are happening and when the good deals are happening out of your nearest airports.
Yeah, I'm not planning to fly anytime soon, but I hopped on Google Flights and I saw that there's a $35 flight from Atlanta to Chicago.
Oh,
that's crazy cheap, dude.
That is crazy.
It's like EasyJet or Ryanair prices. It's like, I wasn't planning to go to Chicago, but I just might if I can do it for that little money.
Seriously.
And you might be able to find super cheap flights too for flights further out on the calendar when it might be a little less nerve-wracking to get on a plane. But beware of the additional fees that you might be on the hook for if you do snag a discounted ticket. You know, cheap tickets could come with baggage fees, fees for picking a seat, all types of fees. You know, airlines love fees. So know the cancellation policy as well if you have to change your flight. And actually, the points guys created a helpful all-in-one place to see the current cancellation policies, and we'll make sure to link to that in the show notes. And dude, speaking of the ways COVID is changing how we live, do you ever disinfect your credit card?
I've never done it.
You really have never done that?
No. I probably should, I guess, now.
And back in the spring, before we knew much about how COVID spread, I feel like I was doing it maybe, I don't know, every couple of days. Honestly, I think every time we were going out, because we weren't going out that much to grocery stores, but anytime we did, I was, you know, I don't know, you see certain stores and certain restaurants kind of wiping your card down for you. And so then you go to one that doesn't do that and you think, oh, how come you didn't wipe down my card? And so once I get home, I would kind of do it myself. You know, according to Harvard Health, the coronavirus can live on plastic and stainless steel for up to 3 days. And the CDC advises that frequently touched objects and surfaces should also be cleaned and sanitized at least once a day.
That's why I only roll with titanium credit cards, Matt.
naturally germ-free? I don't think that's true. So experts say, you know, to use a clean cloth with alcohol, give it a good wipe down. It's not a major way that the coronavirus is being spread, but it's certainly a good step to take, certainly something to be aware of. But, you know, folks should also consider using Google or Apple Pay and even go completely contactless.
Okay, so that, I've never disinfected my credit cards, and maybe I should, but I just literally signed up for Google Pay, and I gotta say, it's a game changer already. I don't know why I've never done this before. I kind of feel like an old man who was holding out on new technology or something like that. But man, it was a breeze to set it up. It was a breeze to check out.
It's quick too, right?
Yeah.
Like when you hold it over the little reader?
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's great. So I would say it's way smoother than pulling out your credit card, and it takes less time as well. Not to mention that you don't have anything to disinfect afterwards because it's completely touch-free.
So no touchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So if you don't want to have to sanitize your credit cards, then yeah, Google or Apple Pay can be just as easy. And actually, you know, they can be safer methods of payment at the same time.
Yeah, I think for a while, like, I avoided Apple Pay because I was under the impression that I had to use the Apple credit card. You know, like, they rolled that out not that long ago. And I think in my mind, I was thinking, oh, well, I want to be able to use my old credit cards. But that's not how these things work. These are mobile wallets, essentially, and you can just take a picture of your credit card and it automatically scans the information in for you. It's awesome. So you're still able to use, you know, your great credit cards, like the ones that give 6% back on grocery stores like that. I'm going to continue to use that no matter if I have to touch all sorts of things. Like, I'm going to get that 6% back. And so for me, I think, for a while there, I just had a misunderstanding of how mobile wallets actually worked. So if that's not something you've ever given a shot, definitely check out the Google Pay or Apple Pay if you have an iPhone.
No doubt. All right, Matt, well, we got more to get to, including breaking news on what's happening with my Nissan Leaf. We'll get to that and more right after this break.
All right, we are back from the break. And Joe, we were just talking about Google Pay. So speaking of Google and cell phones, I actually just saw that Google is eliminating their unlimited photo storage next year.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it's a big bummer.
So I think for folks who have phones that have smaller hard drives that have been dependent on Google Photos, I think that's definitely something to keep in mind. You know, like, you might want to pay a little bit more for a phone with larger storage so you don't have to pay those monthly fees to, you know, iCloud or to Google Photos.
Or do a photo dump from your phone onto your computer.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's another way to do it too. Because the storage sometimes on phones, to get a small upgrade in storage, it can be an extra $70, $80, $100 for the next level. And sometimes that doesn't feel worth it. Your computer probably has 300 gigs of storage on it already, or you might have a terabyte backup. So just start tossing your photos on there, delete the old ones off your phone, and you're good to go.
Yeah, man, that's right. Let's talk about movie theaters, right? AMC, like every other single movie theater chain out there, is having a really tough time. Earlier this month, they actually reported a 91% drop in revenue.
Dang.
That's never a good sign when you see something like that. Well, one of the ways that they're trying to claw back some of that revenue is you can now rent a private theater for a movie showing. Variety reports that customers can rent out a showing at any of AMC's 600 screening rooms nationwide for as low as $99 for as many as 20 patrons, or, you know, 20 of your friends. And so if you've got some people that you've been potting with and you've been, you know, dying for that theater experience, or even, you know, honestly, just to do something fun outside your house.
Anything outside of the house.
Then this could totally fit that bill.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting because when you actually break it down, price per ticket, if it's $99 and there's 20 of you in the theater, 20 people you trust.
I bet they charge more though, like depending on how many people you bring in.
Maybe. Yeah. They said prices vary. It starts at $99. So I'm not exactly sure what the final walkout price is going to be, but my goodness, you're probably willing to pay almost anything to go see, you know, a movie in the theater these days, and to kind of get that private experience is kind of cool.
Yeah, you can go see Tenet, which you haven't seen, right?
No, I haven't seen it. Yeah. Wait, have you?
No.
Okay. I'm like, isn't the only way you could have seen it to go to a theater, or are they streaming it now?
No, I think it's still in the theater, but yeah, I mean, I think that's like the only movie I've heard of recently. So.
Yeah. Well, all right, Matt, on that note, a hilarious but kind of interesting fact about renting your own private theater is that you're still not supposed to bring any outside food or drink, which I thought was kind of crazy because you just bought out the entire room, the entire screen, and then they're saying, don't bring in your own milk duds. Like, you got to buy ours.
So dumb.
Yeah. So is it frugal or cheap to bring in your own stuff to a movie theater? Like, you know, back before when we actually went to movie theaters, did you bring in your own candy?
Well, before you bought it, I would say it's totally frugal. Like, if you buy out a room right now, like, hey, if I do that, I'm going to bring in my own stuff. Like, it's just going to happen. But so back in normal times, I would say, if you're going to bring in like an entire bag of popcorn with like hot butter like leaking out outside of it, and you're like getting the inside of your jacket or, you know, your partner's purse all buttery, you're being cheap, you know, like something like that. I don't think you should do that. But like, obviously, bringing anything in kind of breaks the rules. But I feel like if you're just bringing in like Reese's Pieces, that's one of my favorite movie theater candies. You're just bringing in a little box of candy like that. I think so, it's totally fine.
Popcorn lovers, you're going to hate on them. But if Reese's Pieces
are
okay.
I love popcorn. That's the thing.
Sounds like a sliding scale of justification there, my friend.
Hey, just a little something like that. I feel like that's just more acceptable, I guess. It makes me think, though, to one of my earliest memories of we went to a movie. Kate and I went to a movie with you and Emily. I cannot remember for the life of me what movie we went and saw, but the ladies went ahead and went into the theater, but you and I, we took a little detour to Publix. They're in Atlantic Station.
Publix is making a lot of appearances in this episode.
Oh, they are. They got the BOGOs and now swinging by there. And we picked up some treats there. Do you remember that?
Yes. And I will say, I am not above bringing my own soda or candy into the movie theater. It might be cheap of me, but I do it anyway.
But it's cheap from a relational standpoint, too, because if you're with somebody, luckily it was you and me and we were together. But even back then, I remember thinking like, oh, is Joel going to be cool with this? Or is this something that he's going to judge me for? And maybe vice versa. Maybe you were thinking the same thing.
I'd more judge you if you bought the $8 popcorn.
That cemented our relationship, though. They're like, heck yeah, let's go to Publix, let's score some treats.
Right. All right, let's keep moving on then. There was another interesting story in the New York Times this week. More companies are helping employees with their savings goal. And that write-up discussed how certain large employers and government entities are trying to help their employees boost their savings and create an emergency fund. Obviously, when we look at the statistics, 50% of Americans don't have $400 to put towards an emergency. So it's a real problem. And companies looking to help out in this way is welcomed for a lot of employees. This dovetails with the trend that we're seeing of employers taking a more active role in the personal financial status of employees in general, too. And there's also a benefit for employers because employees are more likely to turn out better work if their finances are in a good spot. They're actually less likely to be impacted by certain health situations that come on due to stress. And at the same time, they're actually less likely to leave that job too. There's less turnover in those positions. So it's this mutually beneficial thing. And some of these programs offer matching contributions at the same time. So if you are one of those lucky folks whose employer offers an incentive to save, not just an incentive to invest in your 401k, which most employers offer, but an incentive to actually help you save up an emergency fund, then jump on it.
Yeah, never leave that free money on the table, man. And also, getting HR to split your paycheck is a great way to start your own emergency fund if you don't have access to a program like this. And, you know, most of us don't. But taking those steps to silo that money can kind of give you this behavioral game-changing boost. You know, there's an element to putting some of your money out of sight that it will also take it out of your mind, where you'll be less tempted to spend it. And so that's what you want to do with, you know, some of that emergency savings money that you're working on.
Yeah, man, I think going to HR and getting some of your paycheck diverted to a savings account where you're not really thinking about that money most of the time is a great way to go. And you mentioned money being out of sight, out of mind. One of my family members recently completely actually forgot that they'd put a large chunk of cash in a safe. So you don't want to forget about it to that extent. Another family member found it and it was this thing and it was just...
You don't want it that out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. Oh, wait, I didn't realize I had that much money stored under the bed at your house. Sorry, how did I forget about that? So yeah, you want to know that it's there, but you don't want to know that it's there, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Essentially, we're trying to shift the perception of the amount of money that we can easily access. You know, it's like, I think when it feels like that we have an overabundance of money, you know, or when it feels like we have plenty, I think we're less likely to be resourceful. We're less likely to be frugal. It makes me think about when I was a teenager and I would go to, you know, fill up the gas in my car. When the light comes on, I would drive so gingerly. Like, I'd barely hit the gas. Like, I want to make sure I'm just putting every drop of gas, you know, to good use. But then when I fill the car up, I think, oh, I've got plenty of gas, and I floor it. You know, I leave the gas station with a lead foot. And it's, I think the same is true with our money. When it feels like that we have the right amounts of money set aside, then I think we tend to do smarter things with it. And so this is a way for us to essentially, you know, trick ourselves, change the way we think about it. And I think that'll mean that we are able to achieve some of these savings goals that we have more easily.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, Matt, let's get to our last story that we want to share for today. And it will involve my Nissan Leaf in just a second. But there is a story about a new car-free neighborhood that's popping up in Phoenix, Arizona, which apparently is one of the hardest metro areas to get by in without a car. But there is a new development that was really intriguing to us. I believe it's called the Cul-de-Sac, and folks that choose to live there will actually be contractually obligated to not park a car on site or on nearby streets. There's also a light rail line that goes directly into Phoenix from this new neighborhood, right? So this new development, it certainly seems like something that younger folks are going to be attracted to. Much of the development, Matt, in in-town Atlanta where we live, is in an attempt to help people live without a car or live with fewer cars. As the Beltline expands where we live and walking and bikeability become major priorities, and yeah, we're all about that. Anything that helps people ditch a car, anything that makes cities more accessible without having to sit in traffic is great news, I think.
Yeah, I think anybody who lives in a city or lives in an area where there's like some of these rails to trails programs, they know how fun it is, but then also too, yeah, how exciting it is that there are some potential alternative forms of transportation on the horizon. But you know, most people don't live in a place where, you know, not having a car feels possible. But, you know, especially in today's working from home environment, many people could stand to own one fewer vehicle without encountering too much inconvenience. We talked about that back in episode 242, if you haven't heard that one. But regardless of whether you want to live in a planned community that outlaws cars, or if you want to live in a suburban or more rural area, just think a little bit more about whether or not you can get rid of a car in your life. You know, we would recommend for folks to simply try it out by maybe just biking to your office on a Saturday, or, you know, taking a day and biking to your grocery store. See what that feels like. You want to introduce some of these low stress scenarios where you're essentially able to try it out.
Yeah, 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, not the best time to try riding your bike somewhere.
For the first time ever.
For the first time ever, exactly. You'll get used to it after you take that 7, 8, 10 mile trek, whatever it is, one or two times on the weekends. That'll help you at least get adjusted to it, get a feel for the conditions you'll be riding in. And Matt, I gotta say, now's the time. It's time to do it. I got rid of my Nissan Leaf,
woo-hoo!
Man. I sold it. So
congrats, man.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, we talked about...
Or you said you sold it. Like, you are selling it, like, literally right now.
I'm literally in the process of it.
In the midst of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, when we did episode 242, it really, really made me think about how our family uses vehicles. And
that's called conviction.
And I was convicted that we have one too many vehicles. And so it was time. And basically, the way I sold mine was... I sold it to Carvana. We've talked about Carvana before, and you bought your last car with Carvana.
Yeah.
And Carvana is buying cars online too. And the prices they're offering right now, at least for my vehicle, was pretty stellar. I also checked what CarMax would give me. They're very similar in the way they buy cars. And it was a whole lot less. $2,400 less, to be exact.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah. And so what CarMax was offering was essentially what the Kelley Blue Book value for the car was. But Carvana was offering way, way, way more than the Blue Book value. And what's interesting is that used car prices, we've talked about this before, have skyrocketed during the pandemic. So my car is worth actually a good bit more than it was 9 months ago.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason for me selling it. I was like, well, if it's worth $5,000, I don't want to sell it. But if it's worth almost $7,500, then I think I do.
Good time to sell, man.
Yeah, so that car, almost out of my life, and we're just about to be a one-car family.
Nice, dude. That's so good. So have you gotten paid yet?
No.
How does that work?
So I'll get paid, and they'll come pick up the car. Also, too, the way Carvana does it, it's more of a stress-free process. So yeah, for folks looking to sell a car the easy way, that certainly seems like it. And typically, you'd get more selling your car privately, listing it on Craigslist or on Facebook Marketplace. And that's always the way I've sold cars in the past. This is my first time trying something different, but it seems like it's working out well so far.
And so you got a dent on your tailgate too. Like, so last week we talked about the busted rear window. With that busted window, you also got a pretty, you know, you got a good dent on the back.
I heard a pretty sweet dent.
Yeah. Do they not care about that?
So they ask you for the condition of your vehicle and you describe it. And I was honest to every question they asked. They give you a pretty specific offer at the end of it. Huh.
They're like, oh, we can buff that out.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sure they've got people, obviously, that do all the work to fix them up before they actually list them and sell them. But yeah, super fair price, I think. And
awesome.
And when your crummy Nissan Leaf goes up by that amount, like, you just got to take it.
It's one of the few instances that normal vehicles are worth more than they were a year ago.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Almost never happens, but
literally never happens.
Yeah. We're in a time warp.
Nice, man. All right. Well, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com. We'll make sure to link to all the different stories that we mentioned today.
No doubt. And everybody, we hope you have a great weekend. Hope to see you back here on Monday for a new listener questions episode. All right. That's going to do it, Matt. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.